Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
And video games.
This is a special report from ABC News. Donald Trump sentenced. I'm Sherry Preston. This hour, President-elect Donald Trump is appearing before a New York judge facing sentencing in the hush money case for which he was found guilty of 34 felonies. ABC News senior investigative correspondent Aaron Katursky has more.
His lawyers arguing that Trump, as president-elect, is deeply involved in the transition and that going ahead with sentencing would cause harm to the institution of the presidency. But a narrowly divided Supreme Court refused Trump's request for a delay, saying the burden that sentencing will impose on the president-elect's responsibilities is relatively insubstantial. Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who Trump appointed, sided with Chief Justice Roberts and the liberals. Trump appointees Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, along with Justices Thomas and Alito, said they would have granted a stay.
Trump had faced up to 4 years in jail, but now he'll face no real punishment. He will, however, become the first president convicted and sentenced for a crime. This is ABC News. For the next week and a half, it's pedal to the metal at the Detroit Auto Show, opening up today. Here's ABC's Mike DeBusky.
The last two auto shows took place in September, but now the event is returning to its original January time slot. The North American Car, Truck, and SUV of the Year awards are set to be handed out, and Ford is using the show to debut the new Mustang GTD Spirit of America edition. Ford's Jim Owen says the show is a point of pride for Detroit.
That reinvigoration of the Detroit community, that auto show really means something to the community.
Mike DeBusky, ABC News.
A federal appeals court has put a plea deal from the accused 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed on hold, the Biden administration challenging the deal. And Macy's has now picked more than 60 stores nationwide to shut down. It's part of that 150 stores the company said it would be closing over the next 3 years. The closure spread across more than 20 states. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The best place to catch a Friday night fish dinner is the Phoenix Center. Dine in or carry out delicious deep-fried or baked fish. Fish is served from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays only. The Phoenix Center serves food and fun every day. The pizza is out of this world, and after a great meal, make it an even better night with a game of bowling. The Phoenix Center is family fun at its best, open at 11 a.m. Monday through Sunday. The Phoenix Center, this area's go-to spot for good times and great food.
This is Mark Jelenic with the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. Individuals often seek ways to ease the burden from their loved ones. One of the largest burdens you can take off your loved one is to make known what you wish to have done upon your death. We at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center and Muscadet are here to assist you in making your wishes known to your family in a comfortable, stress-free environment.
Your WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is brought to you by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765 and find out how you can buy a house without needing 20% down.
Today's forecast calls for high temperatures near 30 degrees. Also, fairly mild conditions with west and northwest winds at 5 to 10, a low down to 12 tonight. Clouds thicken Saturday and 27, Saturday night 22. Late night light snow developing into Sunday with a high of 31 Sunday, possibly an inch or two total accumulations, and Monday 11 for a high.
Spice up your life at Whitaker's Market. As a cook, the bulk food section is one of my favorite departments in the store. In addition to the nuts and dried fruit, the flowers and sweeteners, we have over 65 dried herbs and spices packaged in convenient 8-ounce containers and reasonably priced for you to take home and make those delicious meals that your family loves to eat. See you soon. Whitaker's Market, 1001 Water Avenue, Hillsboro.
Looking for an exciting career opportunity with a world leader in coated glass for residential windows and doors? Look no further than Cardinal CG. They're hiring for all shifts, including production positions, with the potential to earn up to $29 an hour. Enjoy up to 6 weeks of time off per year and start earning vacation hours on your very first day. Apply in person Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. Interviews and tours are available at 1024 East Madison Street in Spring Green. Join the Cardinal CG team today and be a part of the future of residential glass innovation.
Jelinek Plumbing and Heating. It's good to know someone you can trust when your home gives you a headache. Featuring 24-hour emergency service for plumbing, heating, and cooling. Jelinek Plumbing and Heating has been a trusted name when it comes to helping you solve any plumbing, heating, or cooling needs. Jelinek Plumbing and Heating, offering 24/7 service, reasonable rates, and we guarantee the job will be done right. Jelinek Plumbing and Heating, 649-7916.
Our personal service includes savings. Hi, this is Julie at State Farm. We're always looking for ways to bring you more value and convenience. That includes opportunities to save. For example, a savings may be available to those who choose to bundle a State Farm auto policy with a homeowner's policy. Lower premiums may apply if you have a new home or an older home with completely updated utility systems. Let's talk about the homeowner's insurance choices that make sense for you today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Serving up delicious meals and local radio. Sponsored by Richland Family Restaurant Studios.
We're here on the morning show today to talk about all the great things going on in the Richland School District. We have Superintendent Steve Board on for his monthly visit, but he's brought along some friends today. We have Sean Josem here. We'll talk about what he does as Director of Special Education, and Lisa Goff, school psychologist, and many other hats as well. Steve, good morning. How you doing?
Great morning. Happy New Year to you. And I'm doing great, and it's great to be back on again.
Yeah, it is. Good to have you here. Those months go by pretty fast, and here we are. Today is kind of a significant day for the district, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, well, first of all, it's been difficult for me the last, 10 days to try to get in the habit of writing 2025 on dates,
So it's just, me too.
Things have just flown by, but it's been crazy. But yeah, today is a big day for all districts in Wisconsin. We talk a lot about our enrollment numbers and the official enrollment counts that happen in the fall and September, but a lot of people don't necessarily understand that the Department of Public Education Instruction also has a second official count, and that's the second Friday in January count, and today is the second Friday in January. And so all of the districts across the state of Wisconsin will be taking their second official enrollment count, and this is a big day for us because we've put a lot of emphasis on trying to not only retain our current students, but make our school district a place where students want to come, open up to a lot of alternative education options, and provide a lot of opportunities for students. And we've seen our numbers increase. And so today is kind of a day where we get to kind of solidify that. And did we increase? Have we increased from the fall? Where are we at from this year over last year? All signs are pointing to our numbers continuing to trend upwards, which is great, but today will be a nice day to figure out, once all the dust settles sometime next week, on where we truly ended up from an enrollment standpoint. And of course, as you and I have talked about before, enrollment drives everything for school districts, right? It drives revenue, which then drives what we can do and what we can offer our students in terms of staffing and programming and different things like that. So today's a big, big day. It's going to have a direct impact on what our enrollment numbers that are reported DPI have, because what DPI will do is they'll take the average of the September count and the January count, and that becomes your official 24-25 count, which will then come into play next year when we get a per pupil allocation from the state. And there's a lot of variables and unknowns there at this point as well, because Governor Evers and the state legislation will be working on a new biennial budget this July. Last year at this time, a lot of the variables were known, right? Because we were in the second year of a biennial budget, and so we knew exactly what our per pupil increase was going to be. We knew exactly what spending was going to be. When we're in these years where we don't know what the 526 budgets look like at the state level, therefore schools across the state don't really know what they're going to get for school spending. They don't know what their revenue limits are going to be. We don't know if there's going to be cuts to education. most signs since COVID are pointing towards legislation making a commitment to putting more funding into education, but how they get there is always a political drama that happens every year, and we don't know how that's all going to shake out. Governor Evers, 2 years ago, used his line item veto pen to put into place a $325 per pupil increase year over year for, I believe it's like the next 400 years or something crazy like that. But we also know that there was a period of time from 2012 to 2020 where schools got zero increase in per pupil in increasing. So we don't know what the state budget's going to be. We're hoping that the $325 or more per pupil increase applies once July 1st rolls around. And this is why it's difficult for schools, because the state's looking at, you know, budgets in the future. Schools have to have staffing plans established this spring, right? And they're operating on assumptions that they don't even know what's going to happen at the state level. And so it's never really been a real smooth process when we're in the middle of these biennial budgets at the state level, because we have to make so many assumptions. But to tie that all together, our enrollments are a huge deal. We have a graduating class, a 2025 graduating class of about 100 students. We're expecting our 4K enrollments to be steady at around 65, but that's still a 35 student decrease, right? For year over year, we're losing 100, we're bringing in 65. Again, we've talked before, we've got these two or three classes at the highest levels, grades 10, 11, 12, that are at our highest enrollment. And then there's a kind of a student enrollment cliff, and all of our classes from ninth grade on down are in the 80s or less, okay? So we're kind of expecting a drop of about 35 students, which would typically be a decrease in revenue. But we're hoping that that per pupil increase, that the $325, is going to offset that. And so we're operating with the assumptions that we're going to be pretty budget neutral for next year. And by being budget neutral, then we're planning on being staff neutral as well. So we're not anticipating having to do any layoffs, do any cuts. I know that there's a lot of school districts around our area. In fact, our high school principals came back from a conference meeting yesterday, and a very, very common theme from all of the other schools, or a majority of the other schools, was the real possibility of having to make staffing cuts in other school districts. And I don't think we're going to have to be in that situation. So that's great. That's great for our staff. It's great for continuity of our students. It's great for our community. With that being said, we're always looking at ways to make our process and our people more efficient, okay? And so that doesn't mean that we won't have some reconfiguration, right? We sometimes have to slide people to other positions. They may not necessarily always be doing exactly what they're doing, but we don't anticipate having to make staffing cuts. And then the other variable at a local level, Phil, is that we've talked before about the alternative education options that we have at Richland Center. I'm a big proponent of finding different ways to meet students where they're at. And so continually having conversations about what does alternative education look like for different students at different age levels with different struggles, whether that be behavioral, mental health, anxiety, health-related. Again, not all students learn in the traditional brick and mortar, sit in a desk, lecture, listen, homework, rinse and repeat the next day. Not all students operate in that. In fact, many students don't. Many students survive in that format, but not necessarily students don't thrive in that. And so I think it's really important for our school and school districts across the nation really to be adapting to find out what are the best ways we can meet students where they're at. So with that, we're going to continue to look at other ways to try to meet students' needs. Maybe some changes for next year, might be 26, 27, might not be any, but we're going to continue to evaluate what we're doing and are we doing it the best way possible. So all of that kind of wraps it together, right? It all starts from enrollment, because again, enrollment drives revenue, revenue drives what we're able to do. We think we're going to be budget neutral for next year. Again, tremendous support and appreciative of the support of our community from the referendum that they passed last April. That's going to allow us to continue to do these things and continue to be stable, right? We don't have a lot of extra money, but I do think we have enough finances due to that support from the community that we're going to be able to continue to move forward. make our school district a district of envy, make our school district one that, that our community can be proud of, and do that without having to make any staffing cuts.
In concerning the pupil count, it surprises me a little bit that they do it now because it's not the second semester yet, right? I mean, do you have a different number sometimes at the beginning of the next semester or not?
There are times when that happens. We do have students that graduate at second semester. I don't know historically if, you know, how that all was originally created, you know. Way back in the day, probably when you and I went to school, we were starting school in mid-August, right, around that August 20th date. So I don't know if the second Friday in January started way back then, when maybe that did align with the second semester a little more closely because students or schools were starting earlier, or if it's intentional to do it before students that might graduate early, you know, are off the books, so to speak, you know, and so you get an opportunity to count those. I really don't know the history behind it, but it is interesting. And, it, you know, the Richland School District, I'm sure many school districts in Southwest Wisconsin are similar to that. We're a very transient community. We have a lot of students that are coming and going all the time, right? And while we may only change from the fall student count to the January student count, we might only see a difference of four or five students. It would not surprise me if you told me, and I think this would be interesting data to try to find out, but it would not surprise me if you told me that, yeah, we ended up with a net difference of four students, okay, but we actually had 30 students coming and going, right? I just, there's a lot of students in our district that come and go. And, you know, our folks here, Mr. Josem and Ms. Goff, will, you know, they're leaders of our pupil services. That directly affects them, right? And they can talk a little bit more about that and how we handle students that are coming into our district, leaving our district, because we want to make sure that they're in a spot where they can be educated and be successful and, you know, call Richland Center their home. So it is an interesting time of year.
It is. Well, that's a good transition. Let's bring them into the conversation.
Sounds
a little
great.
Bit.
I appreciate the fact that you called them my friends because they don't always admit that. So now it's on the air. So
sounds good. Well, Lisa, pupil services. Can you describe what that is?
So pupil services would be our school counselors, our mm-hmm. school nurse, myself, anybody else? Mm-hmm. That would be about it. But we're there to help support the students in various ways.
Okay. And you are a school psychologist.
Yes.
But you wear many hats, as I mentioned
I
at the beginning. So.
And I get involved in everything. So I am the coordinator of Check and Connect. I help within the multi-tiered systems of support, so MTSS or RTI. I help within that. I help support the special ed world quite a bit, whether it's at meetings or testing or seeing students or just with the special ed teachers as well. Also with Mr. Josem, him and I tend to brainstorm ideas. We kind of just sit and talk about different topics, just trying to figure out a solution.
When Steve was talking about the number of students that come in and out, you were shaking your head. So that is pretty mm-hmm. common that you have
yep.
quite a turnover of students through
yep.
the year.
Yeah, we
you?
Have, yeah, lots of kids that will come in just because of the community. I am the homeless liaison as well. So families or mothers will come in and like with our shelters. So they will start there. Sometimes they transition out of the community. Other times they might find housing within our community as well and stay longer. So I help support that area as well in regards to resources throughout the year, depending on what the family needs.
Homelessness is a real issue in our area, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, probably throughout the state. It's just there is definitely a housing. There just isn't enough housing available, and it's expensive. And if you're not working, it's figuring out where do we go with our family, with our kids, and be able to afford it and then get a job and transportation and all of that. So housing is definitely a concern all over the place.
As a district, then, what are some things that you do or can do, you know, in helping the family or getting them in the right direction?
One of the things is just like once the kids are enrolled in school, I can help support the kids here in school, whether it's through lunch and breakfast or school supplies. I do also have connections with families, like if they need clothing, furniture. I have a resource guide that I help or that I give to families, and that way then they can reach out to other, such as like Southwest CAP, HHS can also help support. So I'm part of like coalitions, like we've got a homeless coalition here in Richland Center, so I'm part of that. So then I know what other resources are available to help these families. If they're looking for work, there's programs that they can be connected with in regards to that as well.
Sean Josem, how long have you been in education?
Well, I've been here in Richland Center since 02. So for the first 10 years of that, I was actually the school psychologist. And after that, the last 12 years have been in this position, the special ed director.
How things have changed in that time in your field.
It has, yes. I mean, obviously, even the medical field has changed. So historically, many of the students that may not have gone to a public school because of some of their difficulties, disorders, impairments are now coming into our schools, and we're having to meet their needs, which is great. But it also provides some difficult situations sometimes to meet their needs.
Special ed is kind of a blanket statement because there are a lot of different avenues, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, special education. I mean, special means different, unique, individualized. And I think sometimes when people think about special ed, they may think about historically back in the day, you know, those were those kids that went to that special room. But really, special education is much more than that. Typically, people think, well, a special ed student is a student with a learning disability. But that's really only one of 12 areas where a student can qualify under. We have students who are blind. We have students who are visually impaired, hearing impaired. We have students who are both deaf and blind, so a double combination. We have students at our lower levels, our 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds, usually typically fall under what's called the significant developmental delay area. Other health impairment, which is kind of encompassing our students with ADHD, anxiety, those kinds of things. We have a large percentage in our district of students who are on the autism spectrum. I'd say probably almost 20% of our special ed kids are somewhere on the spectrum. I think certainly autism is a diagnosis that's increased over the years, but I think our district, for whatever reason, has probably a higher percentage of students on the spectrum than maybe some of the other districts. We have students who are orthopedically impaired. We have students who have emotional behavioral disabilities. So when you think of a special ed student, it's not really a one-size-fits-all. I mean, they can fall under any of those categories, and they certainly have what's called an individual education plan, and that's unique. So not every student has the same services, receives the same accommodations, those kinds of things. We get referrals from anyone, whether it's parents, teachers, community members, physicians sometimes. And I'm just going to touch a little bit on that because sometimes there's a misperception about when a parent maybe goes to see their doctor, their physician. And through that discussion, through that appointment, the doctor may say, well, I think your child may need an IEP based on this diagnosis. And sometimes parents feel, well, since I have that information from the doctor, then my child automatically qualifies for an IEP, and it's something that happens right away. Well, that's not quite true, because for us, we have to adhere to the Department of Public Instruction criteria. So if you have a child and the doctor may say, well, your child sounds like they might have a learning disability, they should probably have an IEP. Well, the DPI has certain criteria that we have to adhere to, and sometimes the student doesn't qualify based on that criteria. So that's sometimes a difficult conversation to have with parents, because I think the medical field has a certain clout. I mean, we think if we have a diagnosis and we get a prescription, then we have to kind of follow that. But I would say for the most part, those kind of conversations go smoothly. Parents certainly understand that there are criteria, processes that we have to follow in for that student in order to qualify for services.
So you don't actually diagnose, but you do some work is in terms of screening to see what level we're talking about,
right,
things like that.
Right. I mean, obviously, Lisa is certainly a part of that. We do all kinds of different testings and screenings based on the area of impairment we feel the child is going to qualify under.
It's amazing. Sometimes you may have a student excelling in several areas, but maybe deficient in one area.
Yeah. Right? I mean, we certainly have some students who could be dually. We could have a student who's considered gifted and talented, but still have a learning disability. I mean, that is possible. So you have the two extremes. So yeah, you're right.
Do you have students that have helpers with them, so
yes.
to speak, as
yep.
well, or an aide?
Yep, so depending on the student's needs, we do have teacher's aides, classroom aides, that go with those students. Some have one-to-one based on their impairment or their disability. But yeah, it's really kind of an all-hands-on-deck. Special ed teachers quite often go into the regular ed classroom. More at the high school, we do a co-teaching model that seems to help. But then we also have specialized instruction where students do actually go to a different classroom and receive that individualized education. I mean, our goal is to provide what's called least restrictive environment, which means we want your child to have as much exposure to regular ed as we can. But there are some times when they need specialized instruction or specialized service, like occupational therapy or speech and language or something like that.
Can they get that at the district then, or do they go elsewhere for those kind of things?
Certainly, it's a process. Students have to qualify. They have to meet criteria in order to get speech and language therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, those kinds of things. Sometimes if they don't, then it's kind of up to the parent to maybe take them to the hospital as far as outpatient therapy goes.
And you're talking about the whole district, not just the high school then, right?
Right, the entire district, yep.
So you're the director for the whole works then?
Yep,
so.
Ages 3 through 21 is what we serve,
wow.
So yeah.
That's quite an age group.
It is, yeah. We have, I think, over at the last counts, we're 232 kids, I think, in the district that have an IEP. We have students who, based on their impairment, may only just need some kind of classroom accommodation. And sometimes those students fall under what's called the 504 plan. And that 504 comes from, I think, the 1973, I might be wrong in the date, Rehabilitation Act, which means essentially you can't discriminate against people in the workforce based on their disability. And Section 504 of that is really what schools have to adhere to as far as we have to provide an equal playing field for students who have disabilities.
How long have you been with the district, Lisa?
9 years this year.
9 years this year.
Yep.
Yeah. And your role has changed a little bit through those years, too.
It has. And I think hopefully I'm adapting as we see the needs arise. And things are changing with our students with just education in general, whenever they bring in such as like Act 20, and just being up to date on that and helping support our title department in regards to new screeners that have come out recently and all of that. So
I know you have some family events from time to time. Do you have any coming up here
yes.
in the near future?
Yes, we have Strengthening Families. Last year we did this twice in the school year. This year we're only doing it once. So we do have that coming up the beginning of March. Runs for 7 weeks. We will be starting at 5:30 with a meal. And then at 6 o'clock we start the program, and it runs until 8 o'clock. So we are looking for families with students ages 10 to 14 to sign up, and they can call me at the primary school to sign up. But this is a program that is no cost to the parents or to the family. I think it's a very valuable program in regards to just helping the family become a stronger unit together.
It starts at home, doesn't it?
It does. And some of those skills can also be brought into the school. setting as well. We do have, at the primary school particularly, we have a student success team. So teachers can bring concerns that they have with students. And so that's just, to me, that's just a bigger picture of bringing all of those pieces together.
When you have a strengthening family night, then what are some things you do at that?
Well, the students get, with the students, it's mostly game-based. So they come in and they play some games and they do an activity together. But it's each night there's a specific topic that we talk about. And one of the big things is helping these students understand that they can say no to their friends, whether their friends, you know, maybe are drinking or any, you know, things like that, vaping, and giving them the tools to be able to stand up to their friends and not be mean or unkind and you know, say, no, I can't be friends with you, but just helping their friends understand this is not okay. And so we give them the tools to be able to tell their friends no, and let's go do something else instead of this particular behavior that is probably going to get them into trouble. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the, I think that's one of the fun nights that we have, because we actually have the parents then act as the student, and the student gets to act as the parent. And so they kind of reverse those roles and try and get their student to, no, you need to go do other things. And these parents in the past have definitely given these students a challenge to figure out how to get them to not do this poor behavior.
That would be fun to watch,
it,
I think.
It is. It's very entertaining to watch, but very powerful. Very powerful to watch between the student and so it's like their child is trying to tell them, no, you can't do this. And I think it gives everybody a better perspective of this is what my parents go through, but also for, you know, the parent, it's kind of like, yeah, I can now give my child a little bit of what I'm trying to deal with.
You recently had a couple of gentlemen come through that that put on like a scenario.
Yep, box out bullying.
Box out bullying. I couldn't think of the title because they were here, but that was just, that must have been a fun event as well.
Yeah, and each year it's different. The last 2 years it's been somebody different, and they're very engaging. And what I particularly like about that program is, yes, they're presenting at the primary school, the intermediate, and 7th and 8th graders, but they adapt the show and the content for their age range. And they do such a phenomenal job, and they're very engaging with the students, and they engage the staff as well. And I think just the way they are helping kids understand, you know, that you can say no and you have a voice and all of that, and bullying is not okay. I think they do it very well.
We're talking to members of the Richland District, and we'll have more coming up here on our Friday morning show after these words.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time and skip the regular line at the airport and pay for speedy security. Imagine not having to quickly unpack and pack at the place you already came back to. And wearing your shoes the whole time you're there? You can't put a price on that kind of luxury. Well, actually you can, and you paid for it. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for speedy security. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Hi, this is Dan Miller, Old Cooch Books and Libations, downtown Richland Center. Order your books here, and I give you a discount. That's the way it works at Old Cooch Books and Libations, and I have free shipping to any place in the United States. Old Cooch Books, the full-service bookstore, downtown Richland Center.
Now is a good time to reflect on your pharmacy needs. If you're thinking about switching, the place to go for great service from people who care is the Richland Family Prescription Center. The staff and pharmacists do whatever it takes to help you. They're never too busy to answer questions. Their goal is to be your primary source of healthcare information. With everyone watching every penny, they know it's dangerous and unhealthy not to take your medicine as prescribed by your doctor. They've always matched any price and honor any prescription program. They also work with you and your doctor to find less expensive medications. and the Richland Family Prescription Center features free in-town delivery and free mailing. The Richland Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. If you're having a tough time or thinking about suicide, you're not alone. And there's hope. VA's Veterans Crisis Line is full of responders who listen and help. Many are veterans or have veteran family members and friends, so they're prepared to address your challenges. After calling, you'll be connected to the next available Crisis Line responder. That person may ask, "Are you thinking of suicide? Or what plan can we put in place to keep you safe today?" If you choose, the responder will share your name and personal information with your local VA Suicide Prevention Coordinator, who will connect you to local VA assistance and resources. Don't wait. Dial 988, then press 1.
It's crunch time at A&W. Our double barbecue bacon crunch burgers are made with a tangy sauce, smoky bacon, and crispy fried onions. And believe us, it tastes even better than it sounds. Try one today, only at A&W.
Always made fresh root beer, always at A&W. Your A&W restaurant is located on Highway 61 in Boscobel. Stop by soon and enjoy.
At participating restaurants, prices may vary, tax extra.
Welcome back to the morning show from WRCO Radio. Good to be in the studio here with guests Sean Josam, Lisa Goff, and Richland Superintendent Steve Board. Steve, as we talk here, I guess the deadline is passed for school board, if you'd like to run, but you could still write it in if you wanted to. Right?
That's exactly correct. Yep. So January 7th at 5 o'clock here this past Tuesday was the statewide official deadline to declare candidacy for school board elections in April 1st. If there's enough, then there's a primary in February. We didn't have enough. We had two seats that were open. We had it's an Area 2 West. It's essentially the Village of Boaz and some townships to the west of the city of Richland Center, not within the city limits. There was one seat open there. Aaron Umbihan, our current board president, has decided to rerun for that, and there were no other folks that filled out an application to do that. So he will be running unopposed. Again, as you mentioned, there's certainly a possibility for a write-in candidate, and folks living in that area can still do that. But Aaron Umbihan will be an incumbent and be shown on the ballot representing that Area 2 West area. And then the other seat that was open is a Richland City of Richland Center seat. We have a couple of seats that you have to reside in the city. We have an Area West, an Area East, and then there's a few at-large positions on our board. So this is a city-specific seat. It's currently held by Mr. Neil Huntemer. Mr. Huntemer has served out his term, and he has decided to not seek another term for election, and so he will not be on the ballot. We did have one candidate declare their candidacy, Brian Miller, who lives in the city, will be running. And so his name will be on the ballot. And again, any write-ins that live in the city can certainly do that as well. There's a process that they have to declare to be an official write-in candidate. But if anybody has any interest in that, they can certainly pop up or call the district office and talk to myself or Laura Steele, and we'll talk them through the process. But two names on the ballot for two seats. Aaron Umbihan, our incumbent, will be for Area 2 West, and then Brian Miller will be the lone name on the ballot for the city seat. And again, that'll be on April 1st. There will be no primary needed. So it should be a relatively smooth election cycle this time around, at least as it relates to the Richland School District and the board. And then those folks who get elected, they will take their seat officially. I believe it's April 27th, the last Monday in April, and that'll be the start of their official term.
That time's coming. Boy, time goes by fast, doesn't it?
It sure does. It just flies by. It'll be here before we know it.
And you haven't been calling me about bad weather. this year.
Isn't that nice? Yes.
Sure.
Hopefully we can keep that trend continuing.
We'll hope so anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it's always, you know, now until really mid-March, really, when you can get a lot of different weather situations, whether it be cold weather, snow, ice. In fact, sometimes later in the winter, and you get into the March where the temperatures warm up just a little bit, precipitation when it's 10 degrees out is a lot different than when there's precipitation and it's 30, 31, 32 degrees out. You can get some really wet, heavy, high accumulation, freezing rain, ice, that whole mixture. And that's really where a lot of the danger resides. So the forecast right now looks like it's promising. So hopefully we can get through January without any big hiccups. And then February is a short month, and then we're into March, and spring break will be here before you know it. And we'll be talking about graduation. So it's right around the corner. No weather delays from here on out. Although the kids there are like, can we just have a snow day in February? So, just to get a little bit of a break. This is a grind right now, right? You mentioned it earlier, but this is a time of year where there's not a lot of breaks, right? We get Martin Luther King Jr. Day off, and then in a couple Mondays here, next Monday, I guess, actually. No, a week from Monday. Mm-hmm. And then we really don't have a lot of breaks until spring break, which is at the end of March. So it's a time of year where a lot of routines are established, a lot of learning happens, but it does become really a grind. And so it's important for all of our families to stay diligent and stay motivated and get them to school.
The state convention is coming up here this next semester too.
Yeah, every January, three statewide organizations, WASB, which is the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. That's the association that many school boards, our school board included, that's their association. WASDA, which is the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators, superintendents, and other district administration, is part of that association. And then WASBO, Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials. Those three statewide entities all come together, and they put on what's known as the Wisconsin State Education Convention. It's held every year. As far as I can remember, it's always been in Milwaukee. It's a four-day event where there is a lot of learning, a lot of opportunity to network. It is for administrators. It is for school board members. It is for people who are making high-level decisions within the school district. And this year, it starts on January 21st. That Tuesday goes through Friday the 24th. Keynote speakers every day. There are dozens and dozens of different breakout sessions where different members, depending on their background and their role in the district, can get different information. As a superintendent, I will have different things that are more specific to superintendents, maybe legal updates that are coming down the road, things like that are important for me. Mr. Joe Sem may have special education updates, pupil service updates that he may be looking at attending. There'll be some business-related, HR-related, employment, staffing sessions that they'll have. They'll also have a lot of sessions specifically for board members. And so this year, the Richland School District, we're taking six members of our leadership team down as administrators, myself, Mr. Joe Sem, Dr. Sherry Johnson, and then our marketing communications director, Carrie Stoltz, will be going down, as well as two board members, board member Robin Dickman and board member